Fans, it's great to have you back with us before Giants baseball. What a treat this morning. We're joined by Kostya Kennedy. He's an editorial director at Dot Dash Meredith and a former senior writer at Sports Illustrated. He is the New York Times bestselling author of 56, Joe DiMaggio and the Last Magic Number in Sports. He was runner-up for the 2012 Penn ESPN Award for Literary Sports Writing. And Pete Rose, An American Dilemma, both won the Casey Award for Best Baseball Book of the Year. He's taught at Columbia and NYU and lives with his wife and daughters in Westchester County, New York. The book is called True, The Four Seasons of Jackie Robinson. And boy, it hit home for me growing up in Brooklyn. But learning more about this great person, Jackie Robinson. Kostya, a pleasure to have you on the show. True is a really, truly wonderful book. Nice to have you.
Oh, it's great to be with you, Marty. Thanks so much. I'm glad you enjoyed the book.
Yeah, it's an interesting concept, and I've read a lot of stuff on Jackie Robinson, and of course the fans know I've met Rachel, and Sharon has been on the show. But what you did was pick out four special years of his life, which really told the story of Jackie Robinson. Tell us about that concept and how it came together.
Yeah, you know, as you mentioned, it's true, and then the four seasons of Jackie Robinson. So they are particular years, as you've alluded to, and they are also metaphorically the spring, summer, autumn, and winter of his public and athletic life. And I guess I kind of wanted to have a chance to look at him very in-depth in a way at certain points in his life, without necessarily having to go blow by blow to sort of get in everything, right? And so I wanted distinct periods in his life. So 1946, when he's just a rookie in the International League, hasn't even broken into the majors yet. 1949, when he's the best baseball player alive. 1956, his final season. And 72, the last year of his life, where he was very active and before, of course, his untimely death. So it was important for me to see distinct changes in him over that time. I guess that's what I wanted to point out.
Well, there have been a lot of books on Jackie Robinson. This one is unique in that it does tell the story of his life. It is different than other books.
Well, that was my goal, and I hope that by seeing it, you know, there's a series of movies called the Up series by a British director named Michael Apted. And what he did is he looked at a cohort of British kids when they were 7 years old, then they were 14 and 21 and so on by sevens. I think we're up to 63, and it was called 7 Up, 14 Up, 63 Up. And very compelling movies in that you just saw these people at different times in life, and you learned so much and could infer so much. And it was a little bit of an inspiration in thinking about this way of looking at Jackie.
Well, the first part of the book is 1946, and of course this comes on the heels of being signed in 1945 by Branch Rickey and the Dodgers. But 1946 really is just the beginning of the professional baseball, the organized baseball, the white baseball, the Major League Baseball part of his life. And it starts in Montreal, but before you get there, he's got to go through spring training and all the things that happen there. Then he gets to the city of Montreal, Canada. My goodness, what a shock that was.
Well, yeah, it was a big culture shock for in the sense that they'd grown up in California and spent all their life in the United States. Not only that, they lived in a neighborhood that was all white and also all French-speaking, and neither Jackie nor his wife Rachel spoke French. So it was a big culture shock, but in that time, you know, the black-white divide was nothing like it was in the United States. There was certainly racism, and it was difficult for black people to succeed, necessarily become doctors and things like that. There were sort of roadblocks in the way, but there was no segregation. There was a mingling of races at cafes and things like that. So in some ways, it was a much easier way and a crucial, crucial year, I think. I feel it was a little bit under. I found out a lot of new things in exploring it. What an important year it was for him, for Rachel, just to get used to this, being this one black person in an all-white league, which is what he was that entire year, living in Montreal, but playing most of their road games in the United States.
What about spring training, though? And we remember that from the movie and all that, what happened in Daytona Beach and Sanford, Florida, which I've been in both places. How about getting used to that and how he reacted to that? And plus having the manager, Clay Hopper, who was from the Deep South and who really didn't take the Jackie right away.
Hopper is such an interesting case in some ways because he really didn't take the Jackie, and he was clearly racist and used racist language. And but they were going to be thrust together, Clay Hopper and Jackie Robinson. And I will say that after a few weeks, who knows what was really going on in Clay Hopper's breast, but he was had suddenly such respect and caring for Robinson, and who now became a defender of Robinson, would go and sort of rescue him. What Robinson had was not only all the haters, which was the hardest part, but also all these people that loved him and wanted him to succeed, and that put a lot of pressure on him too. So that there would be swarms of fans who would be all around him before and after games. That's why I said Hopper used to come and sort of gently escort him out, and Robinson was appreciative of that. Because he would have, the black newspaper saying, when Robinson steps up to bat, at the Montreal Royal, he is batting for all of us. And, of course, it's better to have people rooting for you, but that's a lot of pressure, too. So he was really dealing with pressure in every way you could be dealing with it.
Boy, Kostya Kennedy is with us, Kostya Kennedy. The book is True, The Four Seasons of Jackie Robinson. It's put out by St. Martin's Press, and, of course, we have our independent bookstores that we support, the Book Tree in Montclair. In fact, David sent me a copy of the book, so thank you, David, for that. Jackie Robinson, 1946. There's a great moment, and I remember it well, reading about it, of course. His first game in Jersey City. Now, that's the Jersey City Giants, so appropriately, he's going to be a Dodger, and he's playing against the Jersey City Giants, but he hits the home run. And George Shotgun Shuba, I remember him so well as a Brooklyn Dodger, shakes his hand when he comes across home plate and became a very, very famous photo.
Yeah, it's a picture. I think they actually recently put up a statue to it in Ohio where George Shuba lived and then returned after his retirement. Robinson hits a home run. And George Shuba, who was raised, as I said, in Ohio, he was raised in a religious family. He didn't really think anything of it. He just, your teammate hits a home run, and you go and you shake his hand when he comes across the plate. But this picture of a white teammate warmly greeting a black teammate became a very famous and poignant picture. And so much so that Shuba kept that picture and had it hung in his living room to the end of his life. Into this century, into the 2010s. It became a very famous symbolic picture of somebody really just doing what one should do. But it was remarkable because of the circumstances.
Wonderful, wonderful. I love this, seeing that picture. Well, people should understand, Jackie had a tremendous year in Montreal, which was great for him. And also, so people could understand the type of ball he played. And he leads his team to the Junior World Series against Louisville, of all places, with all their racial taunts. And the team wins the Junior World Series. And people should understand, too, that Junior World Series matched the winner of the International League against the winner of the American Association. And they called it the Junior World Series.
Yeah, it was a high level of play. There were a lot of good players who would go on to be in the major leagues. One of the stars in the International League who the Royals beat in the playoff round right before going to that little World Series was Yogi Berra, playing for the New York Bears. There were a lot of good players, and Jackie was the league's leading hitter, led in stolen bases, really dominated the league. There was no chance the league was going to keep him for another year, assuming that they were going to indeed integrate the major leagues, which, of course, they did.
I always wondered why they didn't bring him up to the Dodgers. Because, look, 1946 is a year the Dodgers and Cardinals tie for the National League pennant. The Cardinals win the playoff and then beat the Red Sox with Enos Slaughter in the World Series. But why doesn't Jackie come up to the Dodgers? He would have made such a difference and probably would have won the pennant for him.
It's a great point, Marty. And it's interesting for me to hear you say that you'd always wondered, because I had never really seen that or thought about it and kind of came upon it working on this book that there was kind of whispers that maybe Jackie would come up, and Leo DeRocher, who was the manager of the Dodgers at the time, said, boy, I'd like to have him. Because in August and September of that year, he hit like 450. He was absolutely on fire. And the Dodgers, as you point out, they finished tied and lost in a playoff game. You know, they had like Eddie Mixis and Ed Stevens playing first and second and short, like places where Robinson would have played. They had a lot of journeyman players who were not producing. And if they had had Robinson for those, say, 6 weeks or whatever it was, they just had to be one game better. And it's almost inconceivable that they wouldn't have been one game better if he'd come up and even played part-time, you know, a bunch of one-run games. And then they go to World Series. Maybe they beat the Red Sox. Maybe the whole, you know, wait till next year kind of thing that circling around the Dodgers isn't there. The only thing I will say about it is that Ricky was very aware, Branch Rickey was very aware of if Robinson had failed in a pennant race, if for some reason he comes up and drops the ball and goes 0 for 4 and the Dodgers kind of lose a couple in a row, it's really, really risky. And so I feel like you almost can't question it. It's a little like when people say, hey, you know, George Harrison, they shouldn't let George Harrison write more songs for the Beatles. But I'm sort of like, well, things worked out okay for the Beatles, so whatever they decide is all right. And that's kind of how I feel about the choice with Robinson.
I always said, Eddie Mixis, come on. Wouldn't you rather have Jackie? I never forgot that one. All right. 1949 is the second season that you highlight, and that's where Jackie plays. And that's where Jackie, the gloves are off, and Jackie really becomes Jackie. And 1949 is known for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he goes from being sort of, you know, what's also famously told and sometimes remembered about the Robinson story is how he sort of turned the other cheek the first couple of years, even though he led the league in being hit by pitches in 47 and 48 and all kinds of taunts. He didn't argue back, but in 49, he let it go. Just as you say, he took the gloves off. He said, they better be rough on me because I'm going to be rough on them. And all of a sudden, we see the Jackie Robinson who, you know, in the Negro League, teammates said of him, he was up to his neck in every game. He was known as a real fiery, competitive, loud player in the Negro League, and he was all of that in 1949. And all of a sudden, he goes from being a really good player who was Rookie of the Year and a very capable player, all-star caliber player, to being MVP and, you know, leading the league in WAR, if you go back and look at it by today's metrics. You know, he was the best player in baseball, and his attitude and being as disruptive as he was a big part of it, and why he sort of stayed at that extremely high level throughout the peak of his career into the mid-50s.
Boy, 49, a very important year. He's an all-star. He has a big influence on Don Newcomb, who comes up. The racial taunts are still there. And he really got us in Brooklyn to play the game of pickle or running the bases. And you would get in a rundown, and no one could – Kostya, I saw it myself. No one could get out of a pickle like this guy when he was caught on the bases. So that 1949 is the year that Jackie really becomes Jackie. And then you move on to 1956, which is his last year. And sort of, I know he doesn't get along with Walter Alston very well, but it is a big year for him, and he does some amazing things. They don't win the pennant without him. And then he does some interesting things in the World Series, too.
Yeah, I mean, I found that to be, so 55, obviously, for the old Brooklyn Dodger fans, or just in baseball history, was a noted year. It's the one year the Dodgers beat the Yankees. And but for Robinson, it was really a difficult year, and personal performance and all that. In 56, he really rebounded with a body that had been failing. He lost a little bit of weight. He'd gained a lot of weight in recent years and made himself quite an effective player. Nothing like the peak performance of Robinson, but a very good player. As you point out, they wouldn't have won the pennant without him. He played crucially in some games against the Braves down the stretch. And we go into the World Series, and yeah, he gets the final hit, the 1550th hit that he got as a Dodger, is in Game 6, the day after the Don Larson perfect game. is a nothing-nothing game in the 10th inning until Robinson gets a hit over the head of Enos Slaughter, who had had his own history with Robinson, to win the game. And that was the last time the Dodgers beat the Yankees in Brooklyn. And, of course, there was a Game 7, which the Yankees won. But he certainly acquitted himself in that World Series and sort of made this kind of valiant athletic showing in that year of 56.
Well, it was great. It was great. And he wouldn't go when they traded him. He would not go to the New York Giants. And I could still see the picture on the back of the New York Daily News saying Jackie would not go. So whether that was the end of 56 or 57, it was that year, the last of Jackie in Brooklyn, a very important year in the book, very important. So let's talk about what happens from 56 to 72 at the time of his death. He gets involved even more, being an active person, activism. He participates in the civil rights movement. He has a tremendous impact on young people, and he's a great spokesperson. And then, of course, 72, he passes away.
Yeah, you know, he became very active. He had actually begun that a little bit towards the end of his playing career. And he was very sort of principled in what he did, meaning that he was about civil rights. So he actually, in 1960, he supported Nixon over Kennedy in the presidential election. And that was kind of a big thing. And he sort of talked about it. And he couldn't sort of reconcile that the Democrats and Kennedy in those years were still beholden to the Dixiecrats and George Wallace and Strom Thurmond and all those guys in the South who were pro-segregationists. And so he went to the Republican Party. Later on, McGovern comes into the Republican Party, and Jackie goes and becomes a Democrat again. He was very principled in what he was doing and what he was saying, the message he was giving. He had a close relationship with Dr. King. They worked together on several projects. He got involved in sort of economic empowerment issues in terms of a bank, an African-American bank he started, a low-income housing construction company. You know, the way you mentioned the impact on young people, and I love talking about this with you, because one thing that I felt was that one way he really impacted young people was actually as a player. There's a guy in my book who I spoke with, his name is Ira Glasser, and he ended up spending 25 years of his life as the executive director of the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union. And he would tell you then, as now, at any time, that the reason he got into that line of work was because of Jackie Robinson and watching him play, and the kids who saw him and fell in love with him just as a baseball player. Not even, he wasn't the best black player, he was the best player, and they fell in love with him that way, and how that impacted him over the years was really an interesting thing for me to see that it materialized in the decades later, and we still feel that impact today.
I believe it. In my bedroom, I've got number 42. I've got the Brooklyn Dodger jersey hanging up there. And the right. Giant fans know that I grew up in Brooklyn, and Jackie was a big part of my childhood as well. Reading 1972 brought some tears to my eyes, really, of the funeral, the eulogies, the pallbearers. And, of course, his last appearance was at that World Series game in 1972. And who shows up but Pee Wee Reese in Cincinnati, and they reenact that moment when Pee Wee put his arm around Jackie. So I thought when you did 1972, it really was very, very special.
It was a really interesting year, Marty. That year, one thing people sometimes forget is Jackie was outside of baseball, basically from the time he retired on. He never got a managing job, and then he wasn't given a job in, like, PR or anything like that, and he started getting dissatisfied with the lack of hiring of blacks, and so he wouldn't go to old-timers days. So we get to 1972, and Gil Hodges died that year. And at that funeral, it's early in the year, Jackie meets Don Newcomb, reunites with Don Newcomb and Joe Black and some of the other old teammates, and he begins to get kind of repatriated into baseball. And that's how he ended up. First, he went in an event with the Dodgers, which in the summer of 72, which was the first time in a baseball stadium in 15 years. And that led to him being on the field of the World Series, just what you described, with Pee Wee Reese was there and Red Barber was there. It's kind of a little bit of a, you know, trip down memory lane. Yeah, and there he was, and 9 days later he died, 9 days after that appearance at the World Series.
Boy, what a book. It really is terrific, and I like the concept of concentrating on the four seasons, meaning seasons of life and also seasons of his career and life. So the book is fun. True, The Four Seasons of Jackie Robinson. Kostya Kennedy is the author. Kostya, it's a pleasure having you on. I assume the book can be gotten at all the usual outlets.
Yeah, wherever you would buy your books. You mentioned a local bookstore that you guys like, and that's great. Wherever anybody wants to get them, it is on Amazon, all the online places. It's out there.
Well, I think it's a great one, and you've done some good work in the past, and this is one that highlights what I like about it. The threads through the story are the important threads of his life, and that's what comes out in the book. Very well done, and thank you for being on, and good luck to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Marty. I appreciate the chance to talk with you. Thanks a lot.
All right. That is Kostya Kennedy, The Four Seasons of Jackie Robinson. Wow. All right, more coming up right after this on the Sports Leader.